What's up, everybody, and welcome to Truth with Tara. I'm Tara Simon, and today I have Miss Ellen Peterson on the show. Ellen, thank you so much for joining today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
You're so welcome. So some of my viewers may not know who you are, but they should, and that's why you're here today. So tell me a little bit about yourself, how you got started in music, the family that you come from, because it's very unique as well.
Yeah, so I play banjo and sing in our family's bluegrass band, the Petersons, and we kind of started doing it. We grew up traveling around a bunch with my dad in the Air Force. And so moving around, my parents were always looking for things to kind of add some stability and schedule to our lives. And so we had always been doing music kind of for fun, but we also kind of were doing some sports, and my parents just got tired of driving around all the kids to the different activities that were always segregated by different age groups. Yeah. And so we were doing a road trip and ended up in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania at a bluegrass festival. And he saw these families playing music together. And it was kids of all ages with their parents and grandparents all sharing a common interest. And so he thought, my family could be a bluegrass band. So he bought me a banjo at that festival. I was 12 and we just started practicing as a hobby. And then when he retired, we ended up moving to Branson, Missouri, and there were lots of families that were playing music together. And so doors just started kind of opening, and we got chances to perform in front of people, and kind of the rest is history. We've been at our current theater. This is our 14th season. So we started my freshman year of college, which seems like so long ago. But we like just were doing it for fun. We all majored in different things, not music, in college. And then after we were all done with school and kind of looking at other things, doors just kept opening for us to play music.
Interesting.
And so we're like, you know what? Now's the chance. Let's give it a shot. And we've just been growing ever since. So it's been very fun.
And how old are you now?
31.
Okay. And you said you've been in your theater for 14 years. That's a long tenure. But tell me about what theater you mean.
So in Branson, there's different live performing venues that, oh my goodness, there's well over 100 live shows that perform in this town. So people travel in all over to Branson, Missouri to enjoy live music. And there's also like, there's the lake. It's just a huge tourist destination, especially for families. It's very family friendly.
How cool.
Yeah, they call it like Cracker Barrel of Las Vegas, or like a family friend. Like, it's just very, very like wholesome and fun. And so there's just a lot of fun things for families to do, and music is one of them. And so we perform at a venue called the Little Opry Theater, and it's just inside a complex. It holds about 200 seats. And so what we love about it is the stage is at the bottom, and then the seats kind of wrap around. So you're not like on top of a stage looking down at the audience members. You're kind of like in it, experiencing the music and the atmosphere together, which is perfect for our style of music. There's no production value, no fancy anything. We're just playing music. And so it's a really intimate experience for us and the audience members.
Wow, that's so cool. I did not know that about Branson. And I also didn't know, so I didn't know that you guys were kind of tenured at a theater, like under contract, like that's your spot, almost like residency, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's how Branson works. Is everyone has a regular performing venue that they have.
So it's really like Broadway.
Yes, but each venue will have multiple acts that come through.
Sure.
So we have the 2 p.m. spot. We're a great afternoon show. And so there's also an evening show and a morning show. And that's the same with a lot of other venues in town, kind of depending on what vibe you're going for and really what's available at the theater as well.
So you guys do that on a weekly basis, yeah? Your 2 p.m. spot? I'm assuming it's like a Friday through Sunday kind of thing?
We actually do Tuesday and Thursday. And then during the busier months, we'll do a Thursday evening as well. So people will come to Branson for like a week. So they'll stay either at a hotel or get a VRBO, and will just be one of their weekly activities. And then we also do a lot of touring on the weekends. So we used to do the weekend, because there is a lot of weekend travelers that come to Branson, but we enjoy going on the road. And so, but we don't want to do it all the time. So we'll try to do like one or two weekends a month where we'll be out on the road touring, or we do a lot of private events as well.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So how does that live kind of performance life play into your content on YouTube? Because you guys do really well on YouTube as well. And if you guys haven't already, check out the Petersons on YouTube. Subscribe to them.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just a whole different experience. So we love the YouTube channel. It's been so fun being able to reach, I think we're getting close to 190 million views on our YouTube channel, which is so wild.
So good. Congratulations.
Like, little family. But it's not the same as a live show, but there's no way we can do a live show for all of those people. I mean, the
different
countries that are tuning in to listen to our music is just way beyond our scope of travel.
Yes.
And so, and also we have families and we love, you know, the routine. We would not make it if we lived our life on the road. And so Brandon gives us the stability to regularly perform. We try out all our new stuff on our live audiences and brands before we put them on YouTube. Because you get a different vibe of like, oh, this was actually the moment in this song. And sometimes when you're just playing it in your living room rehearsing, you don't realize, but then you perform it on stage and the audience goes crazy during this portion. You're like, what? Where did that come from? And so when you go and then you're able to perform it for a camera where there's no energy because we're just alone in a barn or in a field with our microphones, it helps to have had the reps. We usually try to do at least 2 times on stage before we throw the video up.
I think that is a huge nugget of wisdom right there to get your reps in as a live performer before putting something up online, because very similarly to what you've said, moments that I would think hit really hard in a performance may not resonate with an audience, and moments that I'm like, this is just like a pass-through moment till this other moment comes is like the moment. And it is surprising. And you are like, really? This part right here though? Oh, am I okay? You know?
Yeah.
And so you're like, you kind of have no context. You're right, behind a camera. And so I would say for those of you listening to this, if you're content creators or musicians, singers considering, you know, like sometimes some people consider like live performance or YouTube, but like you just said, I really think that the magic in your YouTube channel is because you've tested it in that live performance environment. You've gotten your reps in and you already know, you can already gauge the response ahead of time and anticipate that when you're filming and when you post it on your channel. That's very smart.
Yeah, for sure. And we, during 2020, when we posted so many videos, we had all those songs that we had been performing. I mean, we did learn some of them, but we have been performing for so long, just learning materials for show, but we had never had the time to do the YouTube channel because we were doing so many shows. So it gave us the chance to cancel everything. I mean, we were doing 4 shows a week in Branson and going on the road. And so we just did not have the bandwidth to do the YouTube channel. And so, but then when all the shows were canceled and we just had the YouTube channel, they were like, well, let's go do that. It was so fun because we had all the back catalog of those songs that we had been working on. And then we got to learn some new ones, which was very fun as well. But that's been, I think, the biggest struggle for us with adding the Branson shows back and adding all the tour schedule and trying to do the YouTube. It's like trying to balance
it's a
all
lot.
Of those things. And our Patreon community has been like the shining moments and all that, just because there's such a sweet group of people that are like relentlessly supporting our music. And so it's also
super fans.
Yeah. But finding time, to balance all those things has been like, as all the things are opening back up, we're like, okay, what have we done?
Yes.
We
you've created a monster,
all the things. And so it's just, it's been fun to figure out how to make time for all the things.
I think what you just said also so deeply resonates with me is that like, what have I done? What have we done? And then the perpetuation of that, right? Like I literally feel like every day I live my dream and my calling, but I am also playing whack-a-mole with all of the different things of the dream and the calling. And you know, we're not supposed to be weary and well-doing, but like, oh my gosh, your girl's tired sometimes, you know? And I know you can resonate and relate to that feeling of you're one person, you're one artist, and all of it is so good. But then where's the balance? Because sometimes the all of it being so good then sort of can turn a little sour at times, and you do feel like, oh, well, the Patreon community is now suffering. I'm not giving them the exclusive content, or, oh, I haven't posted on YouTube in a while, so many live performances, and really, really being authentically aware of where your sweet spot is as an artist who can be so diverse and do so many things is really a challenge. And I know a lot of people who may be watching this who are not artistic or who are really steeped into one area of talent may see that as like, oh, well, must be nice for you. But everybody's got their own kind of cross to bear artistically. And whether it's wanting to learn more than one thing and that second thing being really difficult, or being so talented and multiple things, but learning which one to focus on and what to prioritize, I think they're both equal problems.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of quitting doing things that are working and are great, but you just, you don't have the bandwidth to do it. And so in like my personal life, I've had to let a lot of things that I've loved and that do so much good go, even though they're working and producing good stuff, just because they're not the best thing to do. And that's hard.
Give me an example.
Oh, just like things in the community, or there's a lot of organizations locally that I have loved being a part of, and I want to be on the board, and I want to help support, you know, help them with their social media. But at some point, something's got to give. And so there it's like, man, this is really great, and I believe in what they're doing, and I want to help, but I cannot be the person that steps up at this point in my life. So it's like, that is something that I don't think a lot of people teach you how to do, is to step back from something that's working and doing great, but you just, it's not the right season to do it.
Oh my gosh. So I'm a theater major, right? And when I was in performing arts high school, they literally drilled this phrase into your head, and it was, say yes, figure the rest out later. Say yes, figure the rest. And so literally, like, I, in my life, even now, it's been so long since I've been in high school, not going to say how long, but like now, even today, I'm like, say yes, figure it out later. And saying no, like the power of no is something that I'm being forced to learn how to harness. Mm-hmm. But like you said, letting go of things that work, things that you could do, things that you like to do, things that are making a difference even. It seems so counterintuitive because, well, why not? Like, I could just jackhammer that into my day. But then I don't know about you, but I'm left at the end of my day feeling like I'm going to bed out of breath. That's not okay either, you know?
Or like you compromise sleep. And that is something that I have learned. I mean, you know, it's something that I've learned very slowly, but had to prioritize, especially as a vocalist. You can't.
Yes.
Lose sleep. And so that at some point my hours that I can work in a day are finite. And so that is not a constraint I lived during college or after. I was like, oh, I'll just get less sleep. You know, that was just like the easiest thing to go. But, you know, Jesus talks so much about rest, and he went by himself. And so that is the thing too, that like having to give up on the good. And there's different seasons where the Lord calls you to do different things, but you know, for especially now, I felt, you know what, it's okay that you also need sleep. You're a human. So that's been the thing too. Like, that is a good thing. And that is something that should be prioritized, or your voice goes, and then you can't do the thing that like you love and are very, very much called to do. And so it's just been a huge learning curve. And it's a lot of calling on people to help too, which
yes, delegating.
Yes, finding things that they're great at that you could also be great at, but like you can't do it all. So like
and therefore you're not great at it if you don't have the time to be great at it.
Yes.
And you know what? You're speaking to me right now, literally. Like you really are. Thank you. You're ministering to my soul right now. And I read a book once. I forget the name of the title of the book, but it did emphasize rest, but also while being like a very high producing person. And it came from a Christian perspective, and something that he said that blew my actual mind that I never realized in the Bible was it never one time in the entire Bible mentions Jesus running. Hmm. Never. He never ran. And I literally sometimes am so busy, I run to my bathroom in my studio because I don't have enough time to use the restroom in the day. That's how jammed I let myself get. And I sometimes I think about that. I'm like, Jesus never ran, Tara. Like, stop with the nonsense, you know? But rest is so key, as like you said, especially as a vocalist. And as a vocal coach, I tell my students this all the time.
Right.
Do as I say, not as I do. Right. And, you know, I've learned over the years, even you can condition yourself to bad things. And I have learned to be able to, like, go about 3 days of very little sleep and still be able to sing. Now, after that third day, I'm toast. But, like, you know, you do build up this unhealthy stamina that's also not okay to push your body to. And you know, I know that you guys work in a unit. You know, you're a beautiful singer, by the way, in your own right, but you guys work in tandem as a whole. Now, tell me, how many siblings do you have? Like, what's the head count total in the Peterson band?
So there are 4 siblings. So I am second. I have an older sister and then a younger brother and then a younger sister. And then our friend Emmett Franz also is kind of in that core group of, like, vocalists. He's awesome, very talented musician and singer in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
the other band member is our mom, which is so fun.
That's incredible, by the way. Now, how is that family dynamic? I recently did a podcast with Cimarelli, and it's interesting, you know, talking to them about family dynamics, how you just cope and deal, because you're not just in a professional environment with someone, you are their family members. You've seen them do things that no one else in the world has seen them do. So how do you guys deal with that kind of professionalism as a family in that dynamic?
You know, I think there's been very rough seasons where we've had to work through some conflict, but we're at a great spot, and we have been for several years, where we've kind of found our lane. I think when we all started moving out of the parents' house several years ago, that was a huge step. So kind of having our own domain. And when we go on the road, we fly, and sometimes we'll be on tour and we'll go to a place and none of us will sit next to each other at a bookstore and just have, like, a moment. So there's, I think, a lot of family bands grow up and they do everything together. Every activity, every church program. You're going over to so-and-so's house, I'll come to, you know, so it's been mm-hmm. very important. And I think college really helped with this too. Finding your own things that you're great at too, where you have, like, a little bit of independence, where your siblings can come and root you on. And so I love going, my brother's a great runner. And so I love going and watching him run his races. And, both of my sisters are actually coming out with EPs of some original music. And so it's been fun going into the studio and, like, cheering them on in their projects and, like, just seeing the different things that they're really gifted at outside of the family business, and being able to, like, support that has been great. And just having space is a
yeah. I think what I'm hearing you say is that, like, although you guys are a cohesive group, you respect, honor, and make a priority to maintain your individuality mm-hmm. within. So there's a boundary around your individuality, although you are a cohesive group when it's time to come together, and that allows yes. for the balance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we do have so much fun. Like, on the road, yeah. we're always laughing. The situations you get into just doing what we do, we just will, like, you know, endure it in the moment. Very awkward. Like, we especially love when people sing to us at meet and greet lines, but it's usually like, they just
does that happen?
Oh my gosh, it's my favorite. It happened to my sister yesterday.
Oh my
and,
gosh.
Like, you just hear someone start singing and you just, like, slightly turn so you can enjoy just, like, the awkwardness that is happening to this person. But then, like, afterwards, and you can just, like, look at them and just know that it's just, it's so funny. And, like, it's just funny moments like that that happen in rehearsals and shows. And, I mean, when you're yeah. in front of a group of people and someone messes up and you're just able, at this point, we just laugh because we've looked dumb in front of so many people through the years that
right.
it's just, you have this, like, camaraderie. And
yeah.
We also really all feel called to do what we do, and we've seen the Lord do some crazy stuff, and not because of us, because we know, like you said, all the mistakes
sure.
that each of us have made. So it's cool to be like, wow, despite us, the Lord's doing something really beautiful through what we're
okay.
doing. And so it makes, like, whatever small conflicts come up, which at this point, it's like, we have this much money we can spend on marketing. Do you want to spend it on the billboard, or should we spend it on online ads? Or what if we, like, so it's like, but they're not even really fights. It's just what we have limited resources. How do we use them?
Yeah, differences of opinion on how to allocate or like, assets.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we don't have enough bandwidth to keep all this money stuff. We should hire a bookkeeper. Okay, if we hire a bookkeeper, what's going to get, you know? So it's stuff like that we can like work through.
Minutia.
Yeah, we all started doing everything. And so as we've gotten busier and we need to learn more music, we're having to pay people to do more things that we used to do. And so that's a lot
I'm right there with you.
The business stuff that we work through, but we believe in what we're doing. And so that really helps all the little stuff.
So I want to go back to something interesting that you said. You said that, you know, you've seen, it's not something that came from you guys. You've seen God do some pretty cool and crazy things. Give me an example of something that sticks out in your mind to that.
One thing that I hear all the time from people is that they were in the darkest season of their life. Their spouse just died because of COVID, or they just got diagnosed with cancer, or they've been locked in alone. Nobody's coming to see them. And that is when they're just bored online and one of our YouTube videos pops up on their suggested feed and they're like, what is this? And they click and it's not like we're not putting those videos in anybody's feed. We don't know anything. But are able to connect with this random family from the Ozarks. And it just brings them encouragement and hope. And they said they wake up listening to us. And then at night when they're trying to calm down, they listen to us. And it's just been something we could have never foreseen. But it's a very common thing that the Lord introduces our family and our music to people when they go through hardships. So, and we also, a lighter thing, but something that's fun is a lot of kids enjoy listening to our music and parents enjoy that they can just put the Petersons on and not worry about any content, but it's not kids' music. So they enjoy listening to it as well. And so that's been something that's really fun. Like, oh, we're putting like uplifting, like positive content out in the world that like kids enjoy and will sing along and their parents aren't going crazy while cleaning the house or something.
Right, listening to Baby Shark for the 1,000th time. Oh my gosh, I get it. But oh my goodness, please stop. What is the name of that? Pink Fong. I have a 6-year-old and I went through that phase and I am so glad I'm out of it. Oh my gosh, Baby Shark. You know, I'm really big into the deeper why behind music. And I say this all the time. I believe that music in general is at the center of everything. But really what I've been seeing as a trend in the last years is that at the center of music right now is just evil stuff. Mm. It's really dark. Lyrically, I mean, it's not life-giving. And that's on a stereotypical basis. I'm sad to say I can't even say that is on a one-off or exceptional basis. And one of the reasons I love you guys is for that reason. It is highly engaging content musically, like harmonically speaking, when you talk about, you know, theory in music, the arrangements, and also most importantly, the fact that you feel uplifted after you've listened, you feel more positive. There is no angst there. You're not in a tense place afterwards. You just feel like you've listened to something really good. Like you've eaten veggies for your soul. And they taste good. They're yummy, you know? And so I wanted to first thank you for that and honor you guys for that because, you know, I just believe there's a lot of darkness in music and wherever and however we can shine a light in that and be a beacon, I believe that is the heart of God for his people in the music industry. And I am doing everything I can in my power to elevate and promote and uplift those who are doing that. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been a fun lane of music to be in, to always hear those things. And I mean, there is some like sad songs in there too. Like my sister's some like really heart-wrenching ones, but it's still at the same time not any negative or anything a kid wouldn't want to be caught singing around their parents or something.
Right. And nobody's trying to listen to bubblegum and rainbows and unicorns all day long. That's going back to Baby Shark again, and we're not trying to go there. We want to be real. We want to relate to the human condition.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, there's a line and there's a difference between like leaning into the negative versus addressing and owning the negative and still then and yet pointing to hope, pointing to something bigger, pointing to a deeper why. And I think that is the difference. That's the fine line, and that's the rub between what separates life-giving music and music that just causes people to make decisions that are not benefiting their life at all in the slightest manner. So switching gears here for a second, you were also on American Idol, right?
Yes.
How was that for you, coming from someone who's been on one of those shows? And I've actually had students on every single one of them, including American Idol. A couple students of mine, Lauren Lott, Victoria McQueen, were both on American Idol. I was on X Factor. Angelica Hale was on AGT. The list goes on. So I know what you've been through.
Lott on my season?
Was Lauren on your season? No way. Season 14.
What?
Lauren Lott was on season 14. Yes.
And she's stunning.
She is stunning. You're she's gorgeous. So she's been a student of mine for like, I don't know, more than a decade. Hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So you actually like were in space with her during the show.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. She me, but yeah, our season actually, Jax was on our season and now she's like so famous.
Was she?
But yeah, she was great. And there was this like, he was so young and precious. And then he's a part of like a boy band now. And I can't remember his name, but he was like very famous for a while. I don't keep up with any of the things, but I was like, man,
honestly,
for a season,
yeah,
that didn't seem like that explosive. Yeah. People actually went out and did a lot of really cool things. So.
Well, that's what excites me about those shows, honestly, in general, is that the cream rises to the top. You find yourself in the company of a lot of hustlers, a lot of people who are really grinding in the industry, and they have a right to do so. They're very, very talented. The show is sort of like secondary. It's just sort of the magnet that brings this type of artist together. And then to me, like I tell my artists who are on it, look, the HD footage is great. Consider it just that. You are in a networking event right now. Get phone numbers, get social media pages from people that you're auditioning next to, from your competition, because these guys will become your allies after the show is over. You really want to network your butt off, get to know as many people as possible, because these are the people that, as we're seeing right now, over the years, end up finding their own way. And 9.5 times out of 10, it's not from the show.
Right.
That's just a bump along the way and a stop along their journey, as it's been yours and as it's been Lauren's. So tell me how your experience was on Idol, how far you made it for those who don't know, and just overall, like, would you do it again?
Oh, gosh, I do not think I would do it again, but I loved it. It was a great experience for me. I mean, they came to Branson on their bus tour, and so several friends and I just went and tried out just for fun, like no plans, did not think I would make it or anything. And then they sent me to Kansas City to do the rounds. And then I made it through Hollywood Week. And then they had us all perform at the LA House of Blues. And then
That's right,
the Long Green Mile. And that's when I was cut before the voting rounds. So, but it was so great. The producers were very kind. They never pressured me to do any songs that I didn't want to do. And I think that's something, maybe other people have different experiences than me, but anytime I was like, hey, that's not a good vibe for me. What about this? And I even had to like, one of the songs I chose, I didn't like one of the words, so I chose a different verse in the song and they were fine. You know, like they just were very accommodating to what I was comfortable with.
That's great.
Yeah, and you learn how to interview well. I mean, which is why I am somehow the band interview person. That's one of my jobs that I now do for our group is, and a skill I learned from American Idol is how to sit down and have a conversation with someone. Because you do it all the time, so many times each day. And so just the reps that I got during American Idol like set me up to do PR for our group for the rest of the days.
So, getting those reps in. It's called couch time. Some people refer to it as that, right? You know, how can you sit down and on a couch and be interviewed and have a good representation of your group or your yourself and present well, you know? And that is, you know, it's public speaking really when it comes down to it, and kind of harder because it's in front of a camera in that setting. You're looking at it like a big black circle instead of a face. There was no expression, no feedback. And, that's all you've got, you know, is yourself in that moment. And that's a skill. And one of the biggest fears of humanity is public speaking. Can you imagine? You know, and you and I do it for a living. So bravo to you on that. And you're presenting beautifully right now. So congrats on that too.
Well, and it's also like really coming in with a foundation. So they have a idea of who they would like you to be for the
campaign. Absolutely.
And so this fits with their narrative. And so you come in with, well, this is who I am. And so when they say, okay, tell us this, and can you phrase it more like this? It's like, okay, they really want more energy and they want this, but I can't say that exact thing. So like, how do I like, and you're doing it on the fly. So you're like, this is a really fun moment in my life. It's not the most important moment in my life, and my life will not be over if I do not make it through this round. But that's what they're trying to get from you. So it's like a fun balance of, this is who Ellen is and who I'm determined to remain throughout this competition. But at the same time, like working, not being, you know, a terrible person to work with. You want to be a good, you know, I don't even know how to say, artist, or someone that the camera people also enjoy talking to and don't dread, oh, we have to pull something out of Ellen again. So it was like a good balance of, how do I help this TV show make money and be, you know, a contributing factor, but also like remain true to who I am. And so that was a good, like, oh my goodness, it was nonstop every second of every day, like remembering who you are and staying determined to be that person.
That phrase for sure. And here's what I find too many times, too often. They did the same thing, by the way, in X Factor. They essentially have casted you as a character because that's what you're doing, is auditioning in front of a casting director. Mm-hmm. Your voice is important, but it is not more important than the character in which you're portraying. So yes, it's important to always be yourself. But if you're young and or don't know who you are and have a deep sense of self, in the moment where they're trying to shift that and say, okay, that's great, but can you do it one more time? And can you kind of say this and be a little more energetic here? You do want to go on to the next round, because if you're there, you're competitive and you want to win. So the desire, like you said, is there. But then you're at immediate odds with yourself, your authentic self, to not be swayed. And again, if you don't really have a strong sense of self and know who and whose you are, and or if you're young, then I've seen so many times the narrative of a person shift, and even the character, even the tone of their voices shift. And I'm like, that's not who you are. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? And then the worst part is when they don't go through still. And they've compromised what they really wanted to say and how they really wanted to be portrayed. And that footage is taken. It's done with whatever the producers want to do. And then they still didn't get through. So I always tell my artists that are on it, 100% yourself no matter what. Even if being yourself gets you cut, you can walk and say, I still know who I am. I still acted like who I was. And that wasn't what they were looking for, but that's fine. You know, never in a million years would I ever want to see an artist deviate, even left of center a little bit, from who they are in order to get through one more round on a show.
Yeah.
Or to get signed, or to do anything. Like, success to me, and I see this in you now that I'm hearing from you, it doesn't mean anything if it doesn't come from 100% authenticity. And unfortunately, there's so many people who are just so desperate to be seen and heard and matter that they do and say things that really isn't truly who they are. And then the worst thing that can happen is they end up being successful based off of that and have to perpetuate it. And then they're stuck being a version of who they really are. And really, like, if you're influencing people, don't you want to be exactly who you are? And so I love that you say, like, I had to remember who I was, because without really having a deep sense of that, it's really difficult in the moment to remember who you are.
And I was so grateful. I never felt like my worth and my value were dependent on whether or not I would make it to the next round or any of that. And I saw that in a lot of the people around.
Yeah.
So when I got cut and you're going through the lines, I remember several camera people asking, like, are you sure you got cut? You look too happy. And I had always prayed throughout the whole thing. I was like, Lord, just take me as far as you want. And then when I can go home back to Missouri and leave Hollywood, I am great with that. But if this is where you want me to be, then have me be here and I will do it. But it was like kind of a relief to be like, okay, like I did my best, you know,
yeah.
And like I was very content. And the judges were so kind. They told me that I should ditch the family band and move to Nashville and do my own like female country artist. And I just was not interested in that at all. Mm. And I love what I get to do with the family. And it's so much more fun being a part of a band on a stage and being a part of the Petersons than Ellen Haygood as a, you know, like that just is not appealing whatsoever.
You're better together.
Yeah, it's what we're supposed to be. So, and it's fun. Like my sister's doing their own projects and all that. Like there is like definite a wheelhouse where they can share like something that doesn't fit the vibe of the band per se. But they're excited about it. So it's still fun to do your own things, but like definitely the bread and butter is the Petersons.
Absolutely. And I think as it should be. And when you're really confident in who you are, whose you are, then that so shines through and it becomes this deep knowing of your sweet spot. And the sweetness of being in a sweet spot is not to be rivaled with any other feeling, and nor do you feel motivated to go anywhere outside of that. Mm-hmm. So I just love that you know that, like at 31 and even before, because, you know, Idol was a long time ago, you knew that. And it really kept you grounded. When I was on X Factor, was a while ago for me too. And when I was top, I think, 6 in my category. And when I got cut, yeah, sure, whatever. Well, like when I got cut, man, they kept me in this hot room for like over an hour with multiple cameras on me, and they were just waiting for me to cry. And one of the producers said to me too, like, "Why are you smiling? Like, why are you so okay?" I'm like, I'm confused at your confusion. Like, are you waiting for me to like cry? Cause I'm not going to. Like, I'm sweaty. It's hot. Can someone turn on the AC up in here in this LA mansion, wherever I was on the cliff? But like, can we move on? Cause I'm good, you know? And they really wanted that drama. Like, yeah. They really, really did. At least in that show, I found it to be, I found the integrity of the editing and the whole experience on X Factor to be just so much less than what I've heard my artists and now you speak about Idol and what Angelica tells me about AGT. And I walked her through that process. So I had an idea, too, of the inner workings of that show. And it just seemed like X Factor was just so much more just they were trying to catch this agenda, this really like dramatic, you know, melodramatic even agenda in whatever way necessary. And behind the scenes, it was just kind of ridiculous, to be honest, like the way that they would kind of set you up for this high emotional reaction. And when they didn't get it, they were like, "Aren't you gonna?" I was like, "No, go away."
Yeah. Oh, that would be so frustrating. Well, and yeah. It is good to remember too. So you're like keeping in control of your emotions during the whole process, you know?
Yeah.
But I always recommend it to if someone comes and be like, "Oh my gosh, I heard you were on American Idol. I've always thought about trying out." I'm always like, please do. Go.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. You will learn so much about yourself and maybe the music business and the process. Like, it's not about your voice. It is about the entire thing for them. The story.
Yeah.
Your appearance. You know, like, it's the whole thing. So, like, don't. There were so many vocalists that were like, eons more talented than me. I saw it get cut before and I was like, oh my, like, what am I doing here? Even at that stage. So you're just like,
wow.
Okay, it's not about the vocal skill a lot of the times. So
just a part of it.
Yeah. So if you don't make it, but you try out, like, it is good to like overcome those nerves and like put yourself out there and.
Yep. Yeah. You only get sharpened by it for sure. It is a refining fire. Absolutely. And no matter what the outcome, you do hone your craft for sure. It's a very intense and emotional situation. So you have to grow. You have to from it. And have you guys ever considered or have been offered to be signed by a label?
Yes, not any big labels, some smaller ones. But we kind of love doing the whole independent artist thing. So
yeah,
if the right opportunity came, where we could still maintain control of some certain aspects, I think we would consider it. But we love choosing what songs go on albums, and we love choosing when to release them and when to go on tour. And you know, there's just some aspects that were like, wait, I have to buy my album from you. It does not make sense to me
right.
at all. And
right.
so the right moments never come, but.
Yeah. I think it's the right deals never come, yeah. to be honest. And I really feel and have felt for like the past, well, frankly, if you go all the way back ever since Napster, that the industry in itself, as far as record sales, is broken. And labels for a couple decades now really have been like white knuckled figuring out how they're going to keep their jobs and sort of sustain this thing that for reasons just like you mentioned, like so many artists would prefer to be a little smaller, not have the major distribution, but call their own shots. We are in an age where people don't want to go to an office to work. They want to work from their home. They want to get their work done and have it done on their own time. We're in an age where artists don't want to be told what kind of music to make and what songs to put on their album and to buy their own album. They want their own say. And you know what? Rightfully so. I feel like that paradigm shift has happened and it's never going back
yeah.
to the way it was. We just need to pivot and adjust. So you're good being indie and I love that. How many albums have you guys made being indie?
Oh gosh.
You know, it's a lot when you lose count.
we started doing these live sessions albums that I don't really count. But I mean, we like threw them out on the iTunes and Spotify from the YouTube
okay.
channel.
Uh huh.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so if you're not counting the lives, I'd still count them. But if you're not counting the live sessions,
I think
you know
five maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And how many songs generally are on your albums?
Like 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. That's amazing. So, what is next for the Petersons? And for you, you know, I know you said that your sisters have, you know, individual projects and things like that, but what's your 5-year plan if you were living in a perfect world for the Peterson Band?
Gosh, we get asked this all the time and we always laugh because we're flying by the seat of our pants over here. But we do have like projects we would love to come out with. And so we kind of have like a dream list of like
okay.
this vibe for an album. Like we got to do it. My sister Katie's been writing a lot more original music, which is very fun. We have been kind of in a holding pattern until our little sister Julianne graduates from college, which she does so in May. So we're very excited. Until
nice.
Then, we've had some songs and projects, and she studied abroad in England last semester in the fall. And so
okay.
we've had some projects and songs that we've kind of wanted to pursue. But we wanted the full band to be there for them.
Sure.
So we have like a lot of things that we're kind of like, all right, as soon as Julian graduates, we can kind of hit the green light and move forward on these things. So we've just been touring a lot and doing live shows until then. So a lot more YouTube videos, which will be fun. And then we are hopefully touring the UK at the end of the summer, which will be great.
Ooh, where are you going to go?
So we did have a show booked and now we're trying to figure it out. It's so complicated doing your own. Now, if somebody wanted to come and do touring schedules for the Petersons, we would sign that. We are so over the whole
job opportunity
bookings thing.
Yeah.
So, but Matt does it and he does such a great job, but he's just also trying to learn the guitar in the process and sing songs. So, we have a guy in the UK that has several venues that he's familiar with. And so we're hoping to finalize all of that soon.
Okay.
Germany is also one of our largest fan bases. And so.
Really? That's interesting. I wonder why. Maybe there's like a big bluegrass following there.
Germany, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, France.
Interesting.
Italy. It's wild. We don't know why. They just enjoy us. So. In Japan is
wow.
our fastest growing market currently.
And so interesting.
Now we're like, should we tour Japan? I don't know. So that's not happening this year. No chance.
Okay.
So a lot of, we've just been in a holding pattern and we're really excited to move forward with a lot of these dream projects that we've had once Julianne has graduated.
Yeah.
We did record a Christmas album a little bit ago. And so that will be released in November. So we're going on a massive Christmas tour in the States. A lot of extra dates along with our Branson show. So Christmas will be the next big like project and album push. So we came out
Love
with a Christmas
that.
Album in 2020. Yes. We recorded it almost done in one studio, and then COVID happened, and the studio wasn't comfortable moving forward. They had some people with immunity challenges, which we totally respected and understood.
But sure.
We needed to come out with this album, so we had to start over at a whole new different studio.
Gosh.
We redid the whole album. So it was a whole ordeal. We did Christmas all of 2020. And so...
Wow, you couldn't get your stems and just take that to another studio?
It makes it... It's so wild. But, like, if I record banjo on, like, one microphone in one room, and then I go and record it on another microphone in another room, it is a different sound. That's why you have to change strings between, you know, because you change it at the beginning of the studio day. By the start of the next day, the strings are dead. So, so it's just, like, that consistent sound. So
yeah, it would have been a different take,
but the Lord knew.
Wow.
It was fine. The album's great. But people loved that Christmas album, and so we're coming out with another, which
good
fun. My sister wrote an original Christmas song, which, you know, it's
nice.
Hard to write an original Christmas song because people
it is.
Really want the classics, but it's a great song. It's very different, so I think
that's awesome. And you know, there's not enough Christmas music in general. I feel like you do listen to the same things over, and you kind of want to, but sometimes I also am like, okay, maybe something other than White Christmas again for the millionth time, you know?
Yep. So that'll be the next big project we come out with. And then, yeah, just hopefully getting the YouTube channel back up with some new videos. So it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Well, we're going to wrap up, but if there's one thing that you could tell my listeners, let's say that there's young adults, teens watching this, and they love music, and they might even now love you after this, I'm sure. And maybe they knew of you before, but you know, what would you say to someone on the come up or still dreaming of being a singer?
Don't feel like you have the pressure of doing it professionally. It is a fluke in the matrix that we are doing this with how untalented, you know, but it's just sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but that is not why we pursued music. We pursued music more as a fun thing to do together. And I mean, go take your piano or guitar to a nursing home and see how much joy it brings these people. You do not have to do it on big stages, or just post something online that you feel like, man, this song meant something to me. I wonder if it would encourage someone else. Does not, and that's the other thing, it doesn't have to be perfect. I think people have really enjoyed the authentic. There's some mistakes in there. It's fine. We're all human. Everything's so hyper-produced. So don't stress about, oh my goodness, is this, you know, perfect to the last second? No, just do it. I mean, obviously, pursue excellence as much as possible, but just...
Sure.
But
not perfectionism.
Yeah. Yes. Just do your best and put it out there and, go play at a nursing home or share your music with a Sunday school class. So there's a lot of fun ways you can bring people joy through music. But I always support music. It's just a joy.
I really love what you said there, because mattering as an artist doesn't mean mattering only exists on a stage of 10,000 people in the audience. Mattering in music means bringing hope and bringing joy to someone else's life and being heard. And like you said, that could happen in a nursing home. That can happen in your home. That can happen in a school. That can happen when you're just playing for an audience of one, you know? And I love that so much. And I so appreciate what you said. And if you guys are out there listening to that, I really hope you take that to heart, because it's easy to want the headlines and the lights. And I know you see me and you see Ellen and we're on your computer screen or on your television or on your phone right now. And you think, well, it's easy for them to say, but truly, just like Ellen was saying, I find just as much joy as going to a nursing home or singing in front of my piano right there to the Lord as I do when I've sung for audiences of 10,000 people. And I think if your why is deeper than just wanting to be heard for the masses, then God actually does bless that. Like you said, you did it for enjoyment, and then He brought the fruit. You know, there was blessing in the heart behind why you were doing what you guys were doing. And I think that's so pure and so beautiful. And I just want to thank you, Ellen. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on here today, to be light and to be encouragement to those listening and to give us a little peek inside and behind the curtain of what you guys have going on in the Peterson Band. So guys, once again, this is Ellen Peterson. If you guys have not subscribed to them, then please do so on their channel and check them out on Spotify. They're streaming everywhere. And Ellen, thank you so much for being on today. You are such a blessing to so many lives and also now in mine.
Oh, thank you. This has been a wonderful conversation. So really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. With that, guys, we'll see you on the next one. Bye.